This is 88.5 KRFY Pondere. Our next guest to discuss bullying and Bully Prevention Awareness Month is Joshua Barnes, LCSW, I always do that wrong, at Kinnickso Community Health. You are listening to Medical Musings with Dr. Joanne. But Josh, why don't you introduce yourself to our listening audience?
All right. Thanks, Joanne. Thanks for having me. So my name is Josh Barnes. I grew up here in Sandpoint. I graduated from Lake Pondere High School in 2002, and I've been in clinical practice here as a clinical social worker for about 6 years now.
Great. I'm going to give just a quick definition of bullying, just because that's what we're talking about. Bullying is an unwanted, aggressive behavior, real or perceived, where there is an imbalance of power and a repeated behavior. Both the child who is bullied and the bullying may have serious, lasting problems. Increased risk of suicide, school problems, trouble in adulthood with job and relationship security, along with even drug and alcohol abuse. We also remember we are talking about, it's interesting in my reading, some of the sites said, don't call them victims, call them someone who is bullied. Don't call it anti-bullying, call it bully prevention.
Okay.
And then, of course, the perpetrator, which was what I used when I talked about bullying, is the one who bullies. And then there's witnesses and bystanders who are also important to the process. We know that anxiety and sadness among school children have occurred forever, as have incidents of bullying. But there's been so much written recently about children's mental health, especially since the 2020 pandemic, and the increasing use of screens, whether they be smartphones, game consoles, or whatever, and the internet in general. Multiple sources note that 1 in 5 or 20% of students are bullied at some time, and about 16% have been a victim of cyberbullying. Many of the projects were created prior to the pandemic. In fact, in the early 2000s, I gave a bully prevention presentation to several different school districts, primarily so teachers would be more aware of the problem and be able to help their students understand the concept and how to overcome this problem. Then one of the main teaching points for kids was talk, walk, and squawk. Stand up to the bully, walk away, and then tell someone. But many kids don't want to tell an adult because they don't want to be labeled as a tattletale. Telling in this situation is getting help. That's why I was so pleased to hear about the One Trusted Adult program that Dr. Meyer discussed. But I'd love to hear more about your practice, so why don't you tell us how clients get referred to you, the age range of your patients, and, you know, basically, are some of them victims or bullies?
Yeah, so I work over at Kinnickso Community Health, and a lot of the clients that I see mostly, early teenage age, probably 12 and up. I also see a lot of adults. The way that we generally get referrals is through either self-referral or a referral from maybe a clinician, or sometimes for probation and parole, sometimes schools. Mm-hmm. We have a lot of collaborations with organizations like Lilybrook and other community organizations. But the primary referral we usually get is kind of a self-referral from the client or the family.
Mm-hmm.
And I would say that as far as the client population, it probably just depends on how honest the client is, whether they're in that victim or perpetrator, if we use those labels, role. Like you said, it's often part of a cycle. And so a lot of times, you know, kids who are perpetuating bullying behaviors have also been the victims of that. As you alluded to, that, you know, that kind of person first language, it's great. It puts the focus on the child and not the behavior, but it's often kind of hard to remember to use that because we're used to these terms.
Yeah. Victim and perpetrator.
Sure. Yeah.
Well, it's interesting. I wonder if many kids have associated problems like oppositional defiant disorder or obsessive compulsive, ADD especially, or school learning problems. And then they feel, if they're the perpetrator, they suddenly feel they're in power and they never were in power before.
Sure. I think that that's often the genesis of a lot of bullying behavior, is that kind of getting that power somewhere, whether it's that the child doesn't feel very empowered in their home, or maybe they've been a part of that dynamic at school. I think in some ways it's similar to why children gravitate toward games. They can have a lot of control in a game, right? Mm-hmm. And when you're a kid, you don't have a lot of control in your life generally. And so it's easy to see how that could be a big driver behind, you know, kind of wanting to establish control over another person, particularly one who might appear to be vulnerable or weak.
Do you find that they're usually youth, I guess, or teenage to young adults, do they stay in therapy? Is there a problem with, you know, being compliant?
You know, generally, no. I mean, once they get to us, they're usually have some level of motivation toward therapy, or if not them, you know, their teacher or their probation officer certainly does. But yeah, that's often a big part of what dictates the course of therapy, is how involved the kid or the parents, if that's part of the equation, want to be involved. And generally, once they're in there, I found that they're usually pretty motivated to learn skills and to work on things, especially if behaviors have kind of created a situation where they're experiencing punishment and things like that. They're interested in avoiding that.
So the parents seem, at least in the cases that come to you, that they're aware that there's something wrong. It's so interesting when we read about drugs and alcohol and kids getting into drugs, it's like the parent didn't know until they cleaned their room or something like that. But usually there is some kind of a change in behavior or withdrawal or
There are a lot of things that we can look to for that. Specifically with bullying, you know, one of the things that we would really look at generally is, you know, if you've noticed that the child has kind of a noticeable decrease in self-esteem or social engagement, those can be pretty good indicators. If the child is kind of withdrawing from school or other social experiences, some of the other things that we might want to look for are, you know, if the child has unexplained injuries, of course, that might be a big red flag. If a child loses or has clothing destroyed, books destroyed, electronics, things like that, it might be a good indicator that someone's taking things from them. And also, if a child has things like frequent headaches, stomach aches, that can also be a really good indicator that there's some mental health things going on that maybe the child doesn't know how to articulate, or maybe is afraid to articulate, but maybe feel more comfortable saying, you know, I've got a stomach ache, Mom, or I've got a headache. I don't really want to go to school today.
Can't go to school today. Yeah. We had someone in our family who, for some reason, some kids decided that he did something that they didn't think was good. And all of a sudden, he sat down at the lunch table with all the kids he normally sat with, and they got up and left. And, you know, he ended up eating with the school counselor for a while. And then one day, we actually did seek a counselor, and he saw a counselor for a little while. But then one day he called my husband and said, it's over. So they might have been picking on someone else then, or something like that.
Sure.
But it's so interesting how some is, you know, actual nastiness in words, some is physical, and then, of course, some is just excluding someone.
Right. Well, we tend to see some differences there as far as gender goes, too. With the boys, it tends to be a little bit more of that physical, kind of what you would expect, the rough housing. And then with the girls, it's a little bit more of that verbal rumors, and like you said, that kind of intentional exclusion can often be a big one, right? Don't let her come hang out with us kind of thing. And that's, of course, you know, that's not a total explanation. There are certainly girls who bully physically and boys who bully emotionally. But, that's kind of the standard breakdown as far as the research shows us.
That's interesting. What would you call your best success? And then what situation couldn't you improve? It sounds better than failure.
Oh, gosh. Yeah. Well, that's a great question. Well, I think my best success is just, you know, in having long-term clients and being able to see their growth over time, right? A lot of the clients that I work with come from pretty difficult backgrounds, and maybe they've had years of traumatic experiences, various levels of neglect, things like that. Maybe they've been involved in the foster care system or other situations that were not ideal. And so I would say that, that's my biggest success is just in seeing the growth of the client over time. And then, of course, it's really nice to hear from clients, you know, every once in a while I'll hear from an old client just kind of out of the blue and, oh, hey, you know, it's nice to talk to you. You helped me out, you know, a couple years ago. And that's a really rewarding thing, too.
Or graduation, if you see their picture in the paper or run into their parent or someone who knows them and, you know, so-and-so just graduated and he or she is going on to do this or do that. That's always makes you feel good. In fact, as a pediatrician, people would, I would see them, or sometimes it's even social media, and I just say, you know, a great job, or just one of my patient moms had a knee replacement. And so I, you know, sent some little thing, and, you know, you get back, oh, you know, Dr. Royans, you were such a wonderful, you know, doctor, and things like that. So that always gives you that extra pat on the back.
Sure.
Should I tell my story about my husband? He's an attorney, and he would go into the bank, and the bank teller would go, oh, are you related to Dr. Royans? You know, and the bank teller's like 23 or something, 24, and you know, she'd go, oh, she was such a good doctor. And he always told the story and went, no one ever said that about me as an attorney. They didn't come up to me on the street and go, oh, what a great attorney you were. Now they might have, but
sure,
you know,
sure.
It makes a good story the other way.
I have a JD, so I can empathize a little bit with that.
Bullying is so circular, too. I mean, the more one is bullied, the more they might be bullied because they're seen as weak, or they cry, or... And then the other person, the perpetrator, the one who bullies, increases their feeling of power.
Sure. Yeah, I'd say that was definitely true in my own life. I had a lot of older male friends, and I tended to be sort of the youngest and maybe the most physically targeted in my friend group. And so, you know, generally it was things that maybe we would consider pretty innocuous, but there were times when it was pretty tough, and I certainly was impacted by it. And I can recall, you know, in that kind of middle school age where we know this stuff kind of peaks. You know, there were some experiences where I was less than kind to some other students. And you know, as I reflect on that, it brings a lot of sadness. And I can see that was, you know, I think my effort of trying to get that power, right, that I didn't feel like I had in my friend group or socially.
It's interesting because that feeling of exclusion really does make a lot of kids sad and then makes them retreat even more because they don't feel like they can speak up. So I think even the, you know, talk, walk, and squawk is the kind of the same thing. I mean, you have to be able to stand up, even if it's not intentional bullying. It's just that the person themselves doesn't feel included, I guess.
Sure, yeah.
Is that the primary reason that middle school and high school students seek help, or you actually said because of the population you have a whole lot of varying reasons, but...
Yeah, I mean, I don't tend to see a lot of students specifically around bullying. That's probably more of a peripheral issue. Mm-hmm. I would say that a lot of the students that I've seen who are in the LGBTQ community have experienced outright bullying, discrimination. But that would be probably the exception to the rule. Mm-hmm. With a lot of the kids that I see, they've experienced some, but that's not kind of their primary driver for coming to therapy.
Well, I think some of the problems, too, are that teenagers or in youth in general might lack awareness of how they influence others' self-esteem.
Very much, yeah. And now we have so many interfaces with technology, social media. One of the things that's so harmful about the cyberbullying aspect is that, unlike for even my generation, you know, 20 years ago or so, a lot of that stuff turned off when we went home. Mm-hmm. You know, no one was going to call the home phone and you know, get through your parents and then bully you on the phone. But these days, you know, especially if kids have unfettered access to social media, it's a 24/7 opportunity for peers to keep that abuse cycle going.
Definitely. I'm going to do a little break. You are listening to Medical Musings with Dr. Joanne on 88.5 KRFY. I'm speaking with Josh Barnes, if you just tuned in, who's a licensed clinical social worker, and we are talking about Bully Prevention Awareness Month and, in general, the help that you can get through Kinnickzu Community Health. It's interesting, and bullying can occur anywhere, the school, the playground, the bus, the home, but then, of course, now we're kind of focusing on cyberbullying. So it so often happens where a parent isn't aware, and there it can be so harmful. There are fake personas, exclusionary language, sexually explicit pictures, blackmailing. There's so much opportunity now. Even kids who play video games interact with online personalities. How do they know that the person's real and they're really another 13-year-old or 14-year-old. So how do you approach that? Or have you had many children who or youth who can are worried about the fact that the online, the internet is so harmful to some of them?
Yeah, absolutely. We've had several instances, unfortunately, over the years where, you know, children that we've been working with have been targeted by that, specifically by, you know, explicit images that have been shown around peer groups. And I think it really starts with having that education with the kids, probably as early as fifth or sixth grade. Mm-hmm. And that may seem a little early, but as I've worked with a lot of kids in that age group, they're already being exposed to much of this. And so starting that education really early and routinely checking in on the internet habits of our children, what are they looking at, what are they interfacing with, making sure that their online friends are ones that we kind of know of and can vet, mm-hmm. and just being really explicit with them about some of the dangers that are involved there.
I mean, because that's something that can be so hidden and yet, again, so harmful to the child. It's interesting that the children or the youth, you know, are so interested in using the internet very early. And again, as you said, even 20 years ago, we didn't have that. And now kids are asking for cell phones at age, you know, probably younger than 10 or whatever, but certainly 12, 13, middle school. It would be interesting to go over to the middle school or ask Mr. Penrose, how many kids have cell phones and do they have a program now? A lot of schools are talking about putting, you know, the cell phone away. I had one school that I went to actually that had like a shoe bag on the back of the door and you have to put your cell phone in the shoe bag. Of course, you know, if the parents have an emergency, that's why they feel it's important for the child to have the phone. And that might, you know, be a little deterrent to that. But anything else you want to say about cyberbullying? It's just so, whatever, invasive, I guess.
Yeah, again, I think like so many aspects of the internet, you know, there's good things about it and bad things, right? And it's one of the things that we see a lot with the teenage population in particular is that they are aware of mental health issues almost to a fault, meaning that we'll see a lot of them sometimes who are coming in and self-diagnosing because there's just enough information out there online to sort of make a potential diagnosis. But often that information is not accurate and it's often not complete. And so that's another one of the things that I would just really caution is helping kids to find accurate sources of information to go to and trusted adults to talk to, like you referenced with the One Trusted Adult program. Mm-hmm. There's so many areas of potential information out there, and not all of them are equal in what mm-hmm. they're going to be bringing.
I know that we've discussed a little bit, or I told you about all the different sites that I saw online, and I was really impressed with many of them. The Pacer Center in Minnesota was created in 1977 for parents of children with disabilities, and then they kind of morphed into the National Bullying Prevention Center. There's even a government... The government one, bully.gov. There's a dot, oh, here we go, stopbully.gov site and Stomp on Bullying. And the tagline for that is Kindness is Free and the Hate, which I thought was a very interesting, you know, tagline. So there's an awful lot of information. I think mainly the education here is to know that there are great services that you provide. And that parents need to be aware, basically, because if parents stick their head in the sand, then often the child doesn't get the help they need.
Sure.
Tell us, you also noted that you're working with the school system on dialectical behavior therapy. So tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, I'm really excited about that. So like I said, I graduated from Lake Pontre High School back in 2002. And next month, here in September, we're going to be launching a dialectical behavior therapy group at LPO High School. And so that will primarily focus on teaching some of the students there just basic skills around mindfulness, communication, emotional regulation skills, affect tolerance skills, just very applicable things that they can use throughout their lives on kind of a daily basis.
So will you have like workshops with the teachers first or mainly with the students, or how does that go?
So this will actually be a every week interactive group with the students, myself, and then Stacey Luce, who's also a therapist with us, who works embedded in the school. She's full-time with the middle schools and high schools in the district. And so we'll meet with the students every Friday for about an hour. And there will be a light homework component, nothing too much, but it'll build upon itself week after week. And hopefully give them a really nice kind of baseline of different skills that they can use mm-hmm. as they're encountering different things.
It sounds like those skills, again, dovetail so well with teaching a student to speak up to a bully and to have, you know, better self-esteem and better social emotional kind of regulation. So that sounds like it really, really does coordinate with Dr. Meyer's programs that she has in the whole school district.
Yeah, that would be the hope. So much of the foundation of so much that we do in therapy is around noticing, right? Noticing what we're feeling, what we're thinking. And so that's a big foundation of DBT generally, is that mindfulness aspect. And once the students can recognize what's happening around them in their own bodies, in their own thoughts and emotions, they can do a much better job of seeking help, helping their peers, calling out others when they're behaving in ways that aren't productive or healthy. And I think that's a big piece of it too, is just that education around like we can speak up when we see something that we don't feel is right, and trying to get away from that old model of, you know, don't be a tattletale kind of thing.
Yeah, it's hard to, you know, explain even the difference between tattletale and telling,
right?
You know, one of the sites kind of said, well, it's not, you're not being a tattletale, you're just telling an adult. And then the words they used to say tell sounded like you were a tattletale.
Right.
So, I mean, teaching the students to be able to stand up for themselves, I think, is really what we're talking about. Is there anything we've missed in your practice that we should know about?
We're really trying to expand services over at Kiniksu. We've got a great team that we're building. We're currently doing adult groups at our new clinic on Baldy Mountain Road. And then we'll also be starting those groups in the school district and just trying to continue to build out as many partnerships as we can with the community, get more groups going, and just really trying to serve as many different aspects of the community as we possibly can.
That's wonderful. It was interesting when I was doing that reading, the Pacer Center actually has two groups called Kids Against Bullying and Teens Against Bullying. And the Teens Against Bullying actually had worksheets where they were supposed to put down what the problem is and then, you know, how they would solve it and things. So that was a really good resource, I think. So basically, bully prevention efforts center around empowering kids to understand bullying, to speak up for themselves, to stand up to the bully, whether they are someone who's being bullied or even being a bystander, then telling a teacher, a parent, or another trusted adult. A sincere thank you go to Dr. Becky Meyer from the Lake Ponderay School District and to Joshua Barnes, licensed clinical social worker from Kiniksu Community Health, for sharing their knowledge about bullying, bully prevention efforts, and basically the social emotional support of all students and even parents and teachers. Thank you all for listening to Medical Musings with Dr. Joanne. Please do remember that this is a medical information show. It does not substitute for discussing your concerns with your medical provider. And please tune in again next month on November 3rd, when we'll be talking about Alzheimer's disease and the importance of caregiving with author Mary Moreland. Mary's book, The Gap Between Loving and Supporting Someone with Alzheimer's Disease, outlines her journey as a caregiver to her mother. This is 88.5 KRFY, Community Radio for North Idaho.